Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, supporting victims of torture. Why the fight against this insidious practice must be stepped up, even in our Western democratic countries. And bringing faith to bear on the high-flying world of banking, investments and the financial sector. Stay tuned. All people are born free and equal in dignity and rights, proclaims the first article of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, drawn up and adopted by the United Nations General Assembly back in 1948. Article 5 of that same declaration states that no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment. Almost four decades later, on June the 26th, 1987, the UN Convention Against Torture came into force, requiring states to take effective measures to prevent any such attacks on the physical, mental or moral integrity of the individual. Over 150 nations have signed up to this convention, yet human rights groups report that torture is still widely practiced in more than half the countries of our world today. Even more worryingly, many of them are raising the alarm about a change of attitudes towards torture, even among law-abiding citizens in the most democratic Western countries. That's why June the 26th each year continues to be observed as the International Day in Support of Torture Victims, no longer necessarily prisoners of conscience or political opponents in dictatorships or war-ravaged nations, but increasingly the poor, the homeless, petty criminals or immigrants who have escaped torture in their own country only to find themselves suffering humiliating and degrading treatment in prisons or detention centres here in our Western nations.
It's a real problem because if these democratic countries don't give example to the world, and in fact they don't give it now, well, all the human rights are in danger.
Here in Italy, the group Action of Christians for the Abolition of Torture is promoting a new award for university students, encouraging young people to take up the challenge of ensuring that torture is strictly prohibited against anyone, at any time and in any place. Sylvie Boucari de Pontoile is president of the Paris-based International Federation of Actions of Christians Against Torture. She told me more about this Italian initiative and about the broader work of her organisation.
Yes, because we think that the young people should engage in this struggle against torture. It's so important for our countries, European democratic countries, to be leader in this struggle, because the torture contaminates all. If we do that, I don't know if people know that Italy is the second country which be regularly condemned by the European Court of Human Rights, just after Turkey. It's incredible, but it's true now, so it's a great problem. We would like that the young people are in the first rank.
In the front line.
In the front line, exactly, of this struggle.
And this initiative is to encourage them to write about it, to present a thesis on this issue.
Yes, we would like that we began or continue to think about the contamination of the mistreatment. When you mistreat some people, when you touch his or her dignity, human dignity, which is the heart of each human being, we think we have to think about that and how it cuts the society, how it destroys our society. We are the countries of the human rights. We are democracies. But now we say, well, we can mistreat prisoners in the prison. We can mistreat the foreigners, the refugees, the migrants. we can mistreat some people who are not like us. And when we began to do that, we just let the possibility, the opportunity to mistreat anyone.
Particularly in the name of the war on terror, this resurfacing of torture in Western countries, European and American prisons particularly, began to resurface. Are you confident that perhaps that particular challenge is now declining again?
Well, it's very important that there is a change in the American administration. It's true, but the spirit, the way that we think now, is different from 10 years ago. The American brought the idea that we could do some mistreatment if there are some people who are threatening our societies. And this is like a sort of a door which is open now. So I think the most fight we have to do is to cut off this idea first, is to say clearly to everyone that torture, no, never, nowhere, to no person, to anybody. It's very important to say that clearly, that Catholic Church say that publicly, clearly, all the churches, Christian churches, but also our governments. And in fact, our governments don't say that until now, clearly. We have to reassure that we put some law which are forbid clearly the torture, which punish clearly the responsible of the torture, the people who do that really, but also the people who give the order to do that. It's very important to fight against the impunity about this. It's a sort of signal to all the world. We have to be, again, some example. Because if we don't do that, we slowly by slowly will be transformed in sort of human rights museum, you know, human rights Disneyland. I'm sorry for say that, but I've thought that we are going slowly by slowly to this direction.
And yet most of our Western countries at least have signed up to the Convention Against Torture. Are you saying this is being flagrantly violated and ignored?
Yes, you know, the situation is that more than 50% of the countries in the world practiced torture. And now there are some discussions in the UN that we can touch or transform the convention, the International Convention Against Torture, lower by lower. We have to fight against that. We have to maintain, to keep this very important convention, which prohibits very firmly and internationally, worldly, the use of torture. We have to keep it, you know.
It's now 35 years since the foundation of the first Association of Christians Against Torture. Do you think the Church could play a much stronger role here?
I think so. We claim to the churches, Christian churches, especially Catholic Church, we claim that they adopt a sort of common declaration which clearly they say, stop torture. Torture is really, clearly forbidden everywhere. Because the churches now react very regularly to say, after Abu Ghraib, after Guantanamo, it's bad. It's prohibited by the Gospels, clearly. But we would like more. We would like that they say publicly, together, everywhere, to anybody in the world, torture is going to destroyed dignity. Torture is prohibited. Just that, you know. But until now, no church say exactly that. So now I would like to say a call to all Christian churches in the world. Please be together and say clearly the human dignity is the most important thing to protect now, and say to every government of the world, no torture now.
You're working together with the Vatican's Justice and Peace Council to try and promote this idea, aren't you?
Yes, exactly. And the Pontifical Council of Justice and Peace reassure us of their support. They say they encourage us to go in that way, and they try to do exactly the same work with us. We work very deeply together.
You mentioned in particular the vulnerability here in Europe of migrants, refugees, and this is a particularly crucial problem here in Italy, isn't it?
Yes, and it's a great, great difficulty now because, you know, at the European level, the governments adopt a few laws which are very strict about the situation of foreigners in general and especially for refugees. And these European laws, I must say, are not exactly like the Geneva Convention, which protects totally the refugees. So the people who fly from their countries because they are threatened, their life are threatened. So we have to fight against the government of the European countries now, especially the European Union, because of this threat to just the core law, international law. It's a real problem, because if these democratic countries don't give example to the world, and in fact they don't give it now, well, all the human rights are in danger. And if all the human rights are in danger, it's our life, our own life, which are in danger. In fact, we, people of the European Union, we have to realize that.
My thanks there to Sylvie Boucari de Pontoise, president of the Paris-based International Federation of Actions of Christians Against Torture.
I would like to go home, but at the moment, no, because I still feel that my life is in danger.
That's the voice of a Kenyan political activist who escaped from her country after being jailed and threatened by police following the flawed elections and violent protests that erupted in January 2008. Around 1,000 people were killed and hundreds of thousands more fled after the disputed election sparked widespread political and ethnic conflict. Janet, that's the pseudonym she uses to protect her anonymity, fled first to neighbouring Tanzania before finding her way to Rome, where she came seeking treatment for the trauma she suffered in jail, including slapping, dousing with icy water, and repeated death threats. She talked with Vatican Radio's Luca Atanasio about her ordeal.
I come from Kenya, and I left my country because the police were looking for me. I left my country in 2008, October, and I arrived in Italy the same year in November.
Why did you decide to leave your country? Was your life in danger?
Yes, my life was in danger because the police were looking for me. I left Kenya, I went to Tanzania, and they were still looking for me. They were looking for me because I had attended a meeting of an opposition meeting. I was put in the cell for about 3 days. The police tortured me by slapping me and pouring water. Then after 3 days, my parents had to pay some money and they let me go. But the police told me that I have to leave Nairobi because my life was in danger. After leaving Nairobi, I went to Kisumu and the police still came and looked for me. So I left Kisumu and went in Tanzania. In Tanzania, my mom called me and told me that the police were at home looking for me. So I felt that my life was in danger also in Tanzania, and I had to look for a way of leaving Tanzania. Somebody helped me by paying some money to somebody who was working in the ship. And the person took me to the ship and put me under the decker. For about 2 days I was down there, and at one time I was feeling hungry, and I needed some help. That's how I came out of the decker and asked for help. So they went and they called the captain of the ship, and he was very annoyed. He wanted to throw me in the water. But later he calmed down when he heard the reason why I left home. And they gave me a room to stay in the ship, and they told me not to get out of the ship until we arrive at the end of the journey.
One of the first places where Janet sought help when she managed to reach Rome was the International Reception Service for Refugees and Victims of Torture in the central San Gallicano Hospital. Set up over a decade ago, the service offers counselling and treatment for several hundred men, women and children each year who've suffered all kinds of torture and abuse in their countries of origin or on their perilous journeys to seek refuge here in Italy and other European nations.
The context where they are abused and tortured are military camp, police station, or situation of tribal rivalry.
Italian psychologist Francesco Battista works at the reception centre. He talked to Luca Attanasio about the type of problems facing people who turn up looking for help.
Well, the majority of people that come to our service suffer from different kind of mental disturbs. Mainly we have the PTSD, that is the post-traumatic stress disorder. This is a serious disorder that is included in the DSM-4, that is the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Psychiatric Mental Disorder. And second of all, we have the depressive disorder. They suffer from depressive disorders. And talking about the minors, we have different kind of troubles from the countries they came from. For example, they suffer from human trafficking. They have a situation in which they are abused, or this violence, and different kind of violence, and also rape. And we have also the children, the so-called children soldier. And in fact, in our service, we also have a special service that takes care of minors that have suffered of this kind of troubles, but also all kind of minors, both immigrants and Italian. So far, the people that we have been treating suffers from nightmares, problems of sleep, rage and irritability, and in extreme cases they suffer from hallucinations and hard, heavy suicidal thoughts. They are usually very young. In fact, I want to tell you about the story of three boys that come from Nigeria. They belonged to a group, a political group, the Masob, that is a group that looks forward the independence of the Biafra. They were captured by the government and they were tortured and condemned to death, but they incredibly managed to escape, and they started their journey that brought them to Italy. And they suffer from very, very kinds of difficulties during the journey. And when they finally arrived to Italy, they were hoping to find finally the solution to their troubles. But we produced a certificate where we managed to find that they were really, really, they suffer from very kinds of mental disorders, and in fact one of them was also raped, and they used violence on him, or also sexual rather than physical violence. And we produced a dossier with all their stories, and together with the medical and the psychological aspects of the story. And at the end they faced the commission, and unbelievably the request was denied.
psychologist Francesco Battista works at the International Reception Service for Refugees and Victims of Torture at Rome's San Gallicano Hospital. He was talking there to Luca Attanasio. The worlds of high finance, investment banking, or the stock market are not normally considered essential areas of expertise for priests and religious. In fact, the very idea of vast sums of money swirling around in a virtual world 24 hours a day is enough to make many people switch off altogether, unless they have a background in economics or financial affairs. Yet putting faith principles back into finance and banking is exactly the business of one American Catholic priest who heads the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C. Father Seamus Finn's many responsibilities include things like past president of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility and executive committee member of the International Interfaith Investment Group. Travelling around the world to countries where the Oblates are based, he's spent the past two decades encouraging religious institutes to invest wisely and to engage with corporations on a wide variety of human rights and environmental concerns. In the following reflection, Father Seamus talks about why people of faith can and should bring their values to bear on the financial sector.
Clearly, one of the issues and one of the concerns that continues to emerge as in the discussion of the engagement of people of faith with the world, with society, with people, is understanding the ways in which our lives are organized. And one of the important things that has obviously increased immensely or grown immensely in this is the financial sector. Whereas if we may have come from a more agrarian, more rural, more simple society in our background, and there was lots of bartering and lots of trading and lots of going to the local market and purchasing things and exchanging things, the financial services sector has become such a huge part of the economy. And it's done that over a very short period of time, that things like banks and insurance companies and home mortgages and pensions, all those things have just become so much a part of daily life. And they've then taken one of the ways, I think, that people communicated at the local level and institutionalized it and formalized it. And in some ways, some would say, in fact, impersonalized it. So I guess one looks then as to say, if I am a Catholic and I'm trying to be faithful to my beliefs, how does that impact the way that I use money or that I use resources or assets? And what is the impact of the way that I use those things on others? Because in reality, once we enter into this financial services sector, there are many other people participating as well. If it's at the local bank and I go and deposit money, we know that the bank then takes the money and lends it to somebody else, either to purchase something or to finance something. So one wonders sometimes, what criteria are, what onerous conditions, or is it helpful, the conditions under which the money is lent? So that's just a small example, I think, of whereas previously a parent might lend money to a child, or a neighbor might lend money to a neighbor. Now there's this intermediary between us, and it's called the financial services sector. And it operates, as I think the amazing thing about this is that it operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You ask somebody, how is the market going today? And now they're going to ask you, do you mean the market in China or in Hong Kong or the one in New York or Frankfurt? Because the one in China is already closed, so we know how that worked out. So I think getting our heads around the reality of the fact that this financial system is operating constantly and we are stepping in and out of it as individuals, as families, as communities, as institutions, we're a part of it. And so I think it's important to try and be clear in our participation in this system. what kind of ethical and moral principles or guidance are we applying to the way in which we participate, or is it just everyone for themselves and whoever survives comes out ahead? So I think it's important, therefore, for people of faith to try and say, how do I take the commandment to love my neighbor as myself and apply that to the way that I act in the financial system? What is the impact of, I think, one of the other great recognitions of late has been in this financial services sector, what is the impact on the environment or what is the impact on the earth? We've recognized clearly that it's an exhaustible system so that we can abuse it. We can pollute the air, we can pollute water, we can spill chemicals, we can disclose of things carelessly in the environment that can have very long-term impact. So if it is that the river is polluted and now it needs to be cleaned up, there's a cost associated with that. And we may at one point have said, well, that's the cost of doing business and we don't need to pay attention to it. It'll be passed on to future generations. I think we're very clear now that it is a whole earth system. And anything, any way in which we despoil the earth, it has an impact on our lives, on the lives of our children, and on communities to come. So, in other words, we need to count the cost of all of these things. And so I think one of the realities is I think that people of faith are quite often put off by finance. But maybe they're put off because I sometimes think it's because it's so many numbers and it's percentages, and maybe we didn't like math when we were in school, and it's reading a financial sheet is just something that we can't get our heads around. And I want to clearly suggest, I think it is a specialized area, but so isn't theology and so isn't medicine and so aren't all the other things that make such an important contribution to the world. So that I think people of faith don't need to be economists and we all don't need to be experts, but we do, I think, need to ask, you know, some basic questions. What's the economy for? What does it do to people? How do people participate in it? Is it helpful in the local community? Or, you know, are all the people in the local community depositing their money in the bank, and is the bank taking the money and lending it in some foreign country or investing it poorly? So I think there are some very simple questions like that that we can begin to ask that help us to understand how the system works, how it impacts the local community, and then what are some of the ways in which we can perhaps change the way the system works, because I think most now would say that this system is built on a continuous model of growth and consumption without always taking account of the fact that the resources we have are limited. And given any number of different changes that are going on in the world, we have to be much more careful. We have to be much more careful about the environment. We have to be much more careful about the kind of food security issues or water issues, because if not, we end up actually damaging seriously, you know, that creation that is given to us as a gift, that's entrusted to us for our own health and our own growth, but also for the health and the growth and the future of many generations to come.
My thanks there to Father Seamus Finn, head of the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.